Another award winner from Australia seems to have escaped public attention, even though it was President Obama who gave him the gong for research on how CO2 and water interact. Here's David Fisher.
Awards for excellence given by the US government don't usually get a mention in Australia. But this year is different, as the Pecase Award has gone to an Australian. Pecase stands for Presidential Early Career Awards for Scientists and Engineers. The award is seen as the US government's highest honour. One of this year's 20 winners was Australian David Noone. David is from Ballarat, he studied in Melbourne and is now based in Boulder, Colorado, where he leads research on global climate modelling, cycles of water and carbon, and large-scale dynamics of the atmosphere and oceans.
The ceremony was really quite spectacular. We were in DC, Washington DC, at the Smithsonian Institution, the Natural History Museum there. We had really two parts to the ceremony. One, there were awards given out, and the second part was a meet and greet with President Obama.
Did he show any knowledge about your actual work?
My work personally, a little bit. The whole group of us were all both scientists and educators, and his recognition of the group was in that regard. One of the things that he emphasised in the address he gave to the group of awardees was really emphasising the US government's commitment to science, education and training, and the role of scientists and engineers in fostering innovation both in basic science but also in application science and future commercial applications as well.
The award was for David's work on water and carbon dioxide, trying to understand the processes at play as they move around in the biosphere between air, plants and the soil. This knowledge is vital in being able to build accurate projections of future climate.
There's a mismatch between how we treat water in our climate models versus how we observe the water cycle through a variety of observations, including satellites and in-situ measurements that we're doing actually in our group. The gap is the water cycle is big and complicated. You can think of those schoolroom diagrams of the water cycle, but that's not really a good impression that one gets of how water's moving around. It's much more dynamic and there's much more subtlety to some of the exchanges. For instance, one of the specifics that we're looking at is the exchange of carbon dioxide and water in ecosystems, that a plant grows, takes up CO2, at the same time it emits water by transpiration. So you can ask questions like, if precipitation patterns change, how does the amount of CO2 exchanged in ecosystems, how does that change? And really, water is one of the limiting factors. So if we change the way water is distributed on the landscape can either uptake more or less CO2 from the atmosphere.
I would have thought that was vital to know that, because a lot of people have made suggestions about ways of stripping CO2 out of the atmosphere using the environment as a sink, and you're suggesting we don't really know how that works.
I think that's right, and one of the biggest problems in climate models, a lot of the biggest uncertainties in the way we understand the energy distribution on the planet is tied to limitations in how we understand water, particularly in land regions. It's really quite a subtle question, and there's two ways you can approach it. From a large scale, there's some obvious things. There's rain and there's evaporation, transpiration, and then runoff and river discharge. Those bulk properties, those very large scale things, are pretty well described and can be measured in some ways with a whole bunch of errors, but they can be measured. When you start looking at the details of how you might treat this in a climate model, it becomes much more subtle. For instance, what fraction of raindrops that fall on a leaf then drip through to the ground and dribble into the soil as infiltration? That's really subtle to model, especially when you think of a rainstorm that's only perhaps a kilometre or two in size, but a climate model grid box, the size that the climate models try to resolve, is at least 10 kilometres, if not hundreds of kilometres in size. So there's questions of scale mismatch between things happening at small scales and things happening at large scales.
Sure, and you're extrapolating for the whole world, aren't you?
Absolutely. The work we're doing in a couple of specific sites in Colorado, Hawaii and then Greenland as well, we're looking at some specific examples, really trying to test how well our understanding of the exchange processes, sublimation, frost formation, these sorts of things, how they could be described better and then applied to other parts of the planet as well.
Now, you studied for your PhD at the University of Melbourne. Does this work follow on from your PhD?
It does in some ways. That the work I started off with was very much involved in climate modelling, particularly Antarctic climate. We were using the Melbourne University climate model as well as some observations from Antarctica to learn about how precipitation in Antarctica has changed in the history and how one might use records of precipitation to understand variations in climate in Antarctica. What we're doing now expands on that in a couple of different ways. we're focusing on not just the polar regions, although we are still doing some of that in Greenland at the moment, but we're using the same ideas that we developed there in Antarctica, but applying it to places like continental interiors, Colorado, for instance, as well as the tropics, the very dry parts of the subtropics, the doldrums, is characteristically different from the very humid monsoonal areas of the tropics. Again, the isotopes, the same technique can be applied to these different areas in a similar way.
So you're basically saying, I think, that any storm front or weather system is in a way going to have, depending on its source, going to have a unique balance between the two isotopes you're talking about.
That's generally true, although there are a number of subtleties too, and that's where it gets fun in the science, of course. The subtleties is where all the action always is. The subtleties come about where we have this basic idea that water comes from different places, but then we can ask the next question, why does the water from these different places have a different isotope ratio in the first place? I'll give the Australian context with the southerly storms versus storms coming down from the north. Those two different air masses and the precipitation that comes from both is going to reflect the type of clouds and the type of cloud processes that occur as the water moves from the oceanic areas into where it finally rains. So the type of clouds that we have characteristically south of Australia are very different from the type of clouds we have north of Australia in a very crude sense. And so what's happening inside those clouds, the isotopes offer a memory of what's happening inside those clouds. That memory is then what we see in the precipitation.
Well, David, congratulations on your award. It's a great honour.
Thanks very much, David.
David Noone, winner of the Presidential Early Career Award, showing how an understanding of how water interacts with living things could revolutionise our management of carbon dioxide.